I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's Thursday, May 23rd. Now, if all had gone exactly to plan, lawmakers would officially be off duty enjoying this beautiful day, having ended the first half of the legislative biennium. But we are in an extra week of the session right now, and there are some big pieces of legislation that Democratic lawmakers are still hard at work trying to figure out if they can agree on. Bills relating to paid family leave and minimum wage. So they need to get their ducks in a row before they can finalize legislation and send it off to the governor. Meanwhile, Governor Scott already has some big decisions to make. So today we are going to talk with him about where he stands on legislation that's already passed through and on those issues still to be worked out. Governor Scott, thank you for making the time for us this week.
Thanks very much for having me on.
All right. So this is going to be the Will You Sign It show. I wish we had some game show music to go along with that. And we were hoping the session would be over so we could talk to you about all of the bills that had passed and see where you stand on them. But there
I'm not sure we would have scheduled it for today.
We
had a choice. I might know a little bit more tomorrow, but...
Yes, that's right. Well, Bob Kinzel can get another crack at you some other day.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the one that's been really on people's minds that is before you at the moment and that there's a little bit of... a little bit unknown about what's going to happen with this. And this is, of course, the reproductive rights bill, sometimes being called the abortion bill. Your spokesperson has said that it is going to become law. In other words, you're not going to veto it. It is before you now. But you hadn't decided whether you were going to sign the bill or let it pass into law without your signature. Have you made a decision on that?
Yeah. Over the last week, as I've listened to some of the news, seen some of the national attention to this issue. And it's concerning in a lot of respects. So I wanted to take the temperature down just a bit over the last week to make sure that people knew. I believe in a woman's right to choose. I don't believe government should be involved. I think we should extricate ourselves from the middle of this. It really is a personal decision that people and, a woman needs to make with her health care provider. So that's when I decided we should at least send the message that this is going to happen. This is going to go through. And at the end of the day, this will become law. And so I'm still trying to determine whether I'm going to sign it or let it go without my signature. And a lot of that is out of respect for those who have very, very strong feelings on the other side, different than mine.
What are yours? Just what you mentioned? I mean, are your personal views in line with your views as a head of the executive branch here?
Yes.
So those are both your personal views and what you've...
I believe in a woman's right to choose. I've been consistent in that belief. And again, some of my independence as well leads me to believe that, government shouldn't be the answer to everything. And we should really take ourselves out of this. And healthcare decisions, whether it be for a woman or a man, should be between the person and their provider. And so the more we can, get ourselves out of the middle, I think the better off we'll be. So, but there are many people who are very uncomfortable with this, and it isn't just across one party. There are many people who have come to me, people I respect, who are both Democrats and Republicans, male and female, who are just uncomfortable. And we need to make sure that they understand. I've tried to explain that this really isn't our – this is really in practice what we're doing today and that there isn't any boundaries right now. And so this is just codification of what has been practiced.
How many days do you have now before you have to make that decision?
Well, right now, that's unknown. I haven't received the bill.
You still haven't received the bill?
No, which is interesting. I thought I would have received it by now.
I would have thought so, too.
But once I receive it, I have 5 days.
Right.
And gives us a chance to at least technically look at the bill, make sure everything's okay constitutionally and practically. And so then, within that 5 days, I'll be making my decision.
So what's going to determine how you make the decision, or have you made it now and you just aren't
No, I have not made it, to be honest with you. And again, it's something that I am, you know, I've had a few other things to deal with as well. And I just have to come to grips one way or the other.
Now, you say that one of the reasons why you might not sign it but might allow it to go into law would be out of respect for some very different beliefs than what you hold and the firm beliefs that people have across the spectrum. This is, as you said, a bipartisan, a nonpartisan issue in some ways, but it also has some pretty distinct party line policies. And it's not a position that hardline Republicans are taking, the same position as you. In the past, you've been willing to buck your party, at least buck the national party, on things like gun legislation, which, I mean, you know better than I do, was hugely emotional for some people. You were yelled at on the State House steps as you signed that bill, and yet you not only signed it, you made a ceremony signing it, a very public ceremony. So why is it that respect for other beliefs is coming into this decision for you?
Well, again, totally different situation in some respects, and I still feel that every single day. I'm reminded of that by someone.
Of the gun legislation?
Yes, absolutely, every day. So that doesn't ever go away, whether it's at the local convenience store or on social media. So,
do you regret that decision?
No, not at all. No, and I don't regret doing the signing as I did. Many might have thought that was to celebrate the signing. That wasn't the case for me. That was an opportunity for those who I disappointed to have their say and to see me and face me, and I face them. And I thought that was important because I did change my mind on that. That was a change of position, and I owed it to them to again, face them and take my punishment, so to speak. This situation is much different. I've been consistent. I've always been pro-choice. And so this isn't at all the same from my perspective.
Before we leave this topic, can I ask you a personal question, which is what shaped that decision for you? Your stance, which you say has been your lifetime position on reproductive rights and a woman's right to choose.
Well, again, I have a huge amount of respect for the rights of people and their decision making in your own body, and again, it's that maybe Yankee independence that a lot of us have here in Vermont. I'm shaped by a family of very, very strong women. My grandmother, in particular, she was she grew up on a farm in Plainfield and was an active member of many women's rights issues. And so it's shaped. I've had my mom and my aunts who grew up in that era, and they are equally as strong and independent. So I'm just surrounded by them, and it's shaped who I am.
What do you think about legislation being passed in other states like the Heartbeat Bill in Alabama, which clearly is designed to make a challenge at the Supreme Court level, but states that, you know, as soon as a heartbeat can be detected, yeah, that abortion should be illegal, or the providing of an abortion should
again,
be illegal.
And that's the problem, is where do you stop once you start putting parameters? And while, again, what the stance that we've taken here in Vermont is uncomfortable for many, it doesn't put boundaries, because where do the boundaries stop? And that's what's difficult about this situation. And again, I totally respect those who have a different opinion than I do, and that have very strong feelings about this. So out of respect for them, that's why I'm trying to determine what to do.
Do you support the idea of a constitutional amendment that would enshrine reproductive rights in Vermont's constitution?
I would have actually preferred that we just had that, because I think that would have given us the opportunity for people to weigh in on their own. There's going to be a referendum and so I do, yes. The bottom line is yes. But as well, it gives people the opportunity to weigh in and see where everyone sits, and they'll get to vote. And that will, you know, that will give us a real flavor for where Vermont sits.
We're talking with Governor Phil Scott today as the first half of the biennium wraps up. We don't know exactly when it's going to end. Could be today, could be tonight, could be tomorrow, could be not. Carl is calling in from West Rutland. Hi, Carl. Go right ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
Yes, I have a little smoke shop in Castleton, Vermont, and the new vapor tax at 92%, yeah, I think it's going to be detrimental to a lot of little shops like mine. We're 18 and over shops, so we never had a problem with the whole kid thing, you know what I mean? And I know New York and New Hampshire, New York's doing a 20%, and New Hampshire's doing nothing. So I just really feel like it's a detrimental tax. It's too high.
And Carl, yeah, go ahead.
I just want to pass that on
to the governor. Yeah, so Carl is saying, I own a smoke shop. The vape tax is too high. This is going to really negatively affect my business, and we've got neighboring states which don't have a similar tax. What do you say, Governor?
Yeah, no, I'm sympathetic to businesses in many respects. And we see this all the time in terms of New Hampshire versus Vermont. And we'll probably get into some of that and with some of the other issues we'll talk about today. But this case, from, again, my perspective, is different. I think we're facing an epidemic here in Vermont and across the country. Vaping has, and you may in Rutland not sell to those over 18, but the kids are getting the products. They're using them in schools. It's a dramatic increase. We saw the detrimental effects of tobacco. We need to learn from those lessons. What we found is that they have huge health risks as a result with tobacco. This is no different. The amount of nicotine in some of the vaping products is far exceeds some cigarettes, and so this has become an epidemic that we need to stop in its tracks. We need to address this now because this is only going to get worse.
We've learned from other shows here on Vermont Edition that many young people especially don't even realize that in some cases there is nicotine in, you know, in their Juuls, for example. Is a greater educational awareness campaign needed as well?
Absolutely. It has to go hand in hand. This isn't just about taxation, because that's not going to fix the problem. Education is key. And as well, I will say I'm sympathetic to those who are using the vaping products to subdue their addiction to tobacco. I get that as well. But the risks to our kids are too great. And again, we need to stop this in its tracks.
Jack's calling in from Burlington. Jack, what's on your mind?
I'm just wondering why Governor Scott is supporting Scott Walker's appearance here in Burlington.
Jack, thanks for that call. For people who are unaware of this, Governor Scott, you've said you'll appear with former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker at a GOP event in Burlington on May 30th. Scott Walker doesn't seem well aligned with your politics. He has called for a constitutional amendment against gay marriage. He led hard crackdowns on unions in his state, hard line on abortion rights, which you've just been talking about. So why are you appearing with him?
Well, again, this is an event that I go to on a yearly basis. I didn't choose who was going to be the guest speaker. But at the same time, I do know Scott Walker. I've been to he was a governor when I first became governor, went to many National Governors Association meetings with folks from both sides of the aisle. So I got to know him a bit, not a great deal, but he's engaging. He has an interesting story. And again, I'm not the one who invited him, but out of respect, I believe that I should welcome him to the state, as I would anyone else that is a former governor or is currently serving as governor. So, it's unfortunate that we've come to a place, when I see the polarization going on throughout our country, that we've come to a place where we can't be tolerant, open-minded enough to at least listen or allow other people to listen to who they want. I think that's discouraging from my standpoint, because we can learn. We don't have to agree, and it may even confirm some of our thoughts as a result. But I just think it's unfortunate to just say we're not going to accept someone here because we don't agree with them.
this is a total sidebar, and I want to come back to one more question on Scott Walker. Yeah. But then when you look at controversies with political speakers or controversial speakers on college campuses in Vermont, Middlebury College has had a couple of them over the last year. Protests, speakers being canceled, speakers being unable to speak. What's your perspective on that?
Again, I think it's unfortunate that we don't allow people to exercise their First Amendment right. You know, unless it's hate speech.
Well, some would say in these cases it has been.
In some cases, maybe it is, and maybe we shouldn't tolerate that. But we look at ourselves, you know, in Vermont. It's funny. We look at ourselves as being so tolerant and so compassionate and so welcoming, and we're just. But we don't always practice that. And again, I think that's unfortunate.
Because, where else do you see that?
The intolerance?
Yeah. I mean, I have examples where I see it.
We're seeing it. I mean, look at Kaya Morris. We look at with the campers from in Stowe. We look at it with some of what we've seen in some of the synagogues. We've seen it in Burlington.
So you're saying, really pointedly, the racist hate speech that's come across. Because I also see it, though, in places where you can think about culture clashes. So it's a little bit less clear where somebody might say, I like all different kinds of people, but I don't really want that smell of the farm near my house. Right. I mean, is that the same thing?
Well, somewhat. I mean, and again, we had, I don't want to bring up a topic that seems to have gone away, but I will. When we saw the community in the Windsor County area with the Mormons, and out of hand, we said no.
So this is the developer who wanted to develop a huge amount of property in
bringing a lot of Mormons into Vermont, and that wasn't tolerated. So you know,
and you were disappointed in how that unfolded?
I just think that it sends the message, a wrong message. I believe that most of us are tolerant. I think most of us are willing to listen and to listen to different views and perspectives. That's what formulates our basis and our foundation. And again, I just think it's unfortunate when we only tolerate when it's convenient for us to be tolerant.
So back to the Scott Walker issue, you've mentioned, you know, we should be able to listen to people, and he's invited, and you wouldn't, you know, turn your back on somebody who's been invited. But does this signal even more forcefully than some other things the separation between you, our Republican governor, and the state GOP? Because the state GOP has invited Scott Walker to speak. And so that's signaling where their politics are, where the state party's politics are, you know, the sort of party representatives versus where your politics are. I mean, do you see a wide gap between the Vermont GOP as a sort of party leadership and actual legislative and executive leadership where you are?
Well, I think you'll see that with almost any party that when it comes right down to the core of whether it's a progressive or Democrats or Republicans. They're very, very concentrated on their beliefs. And then there are those of us, I would say Democrats, progressives, and Republicans alike that are more centrist and are willing to listen to other views. So I don't think this is out of character for any organization or group. That's just the way it is.
Paul's calling in from Rockingham. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Go right ahead,
Hello?
Sir. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious if it's time for the governor to change his party designation. He's not the governor I voted for years ago.
So, Paul, you, I take it then, are a Republican, and you think that he's too centrist? Is that where you're coming from?
Well, I don't think he supports our views anymore. I don't believe so, no.
What issues are you particularly concerned about or that you'd like to see stronger or different representation on?
Well, start off with our gun rights. The southern half of the state doesn't get represented anymore. It's all the Burlington metro area has the biggest say in the state. Vermont's not sticking to its roots that it once had.
I really appreciate hearing from you, Paul. Thank you for sharing that perspective. Governor Scott, you mentioned you hear about your decision on guns every day, and there's an example of it. But Paul's saying, I don't feel like you represent me as a Republican. How do you respond to that?
Well, again, I think we're a big tent. I believe that we have different beliefs. But when you get down to the core, I believe in a growing economy. I believe that sticking to the fiscal issues is important to me. I'm a fiscal conservative. I think that's one of the basis for me being a Republican. I think smaller government is better. I don't think the government should intervene in every single issue. I believe in self-responsibility. But I believe in the Second Amendment. I have a gun safe full of guns. So if Paul doesn't believe that I'm Republican enough, then I say this with all due respect, he can vote differently, and I know many have. So I accept that. If I'm not the person they want, then I won't be in office, and that's just the fact of the matter.
Today we're talking with Governor Phil Scott. It's towards the end of the legislative session. We're not sure exactly when things are going to wrap up on the legislative side of things, but in the executive branch, there's already stuff to sign, already stuff to discuss and think about. So Andrew writes in to say, I'd love to hear if Governor Scott has or knows of any state legislative plans regarding the increasing cost of prescription drugs. I know that at the federal level, there is some action happening around transparency with such prices, but is there any effort at the state level for more clarity and regulations on the pricing of medications?
Well, I know Congressman Welch has taken on this issue, and I applaud him for doing so. This is the single biggest cost driver, it appears, when you see the Blue Cross Blue Shield request for more, an increase in their rates. Most of that is due to prescription drugs, the high cost. We did take some steps. I mean, over the last 20 years, when I was in the Senate for 10 years and during my time as Lieutenant Governor, listening to some of the proceedings in the Senate, this issue was spoken about even back then. And many steps have been taken over time, but not enough to really stem this incredible cost increase. Last year, I signed legislation for Vermont to take a look at Canada if there's a way to save some money there. I think Jim Jeffords actually started this a long time ago. Bernie did as well.
Yeah, Bernie used to take buses, right?
Right,
buses
but in. I think you'll find Jim Jeffords did before that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll debate that another day. but I think again, it just shows how persistent this issue is, and we still haven't solved it. But it doesn't mean that no one's working on it, because we're all trying to do what we can to make Vermont more affordable, but healthcare overall more affordable.
Let's talk about the plastic bag ban. As I said, this is one of the strongest bills in the country. It would ban single-use plastic bags and require retailers to charge 10 cents for most paper bags, not all of them. It also bans styrofoam containers. It makes straws something that can only be offered if requested. What's your perspective? Are you going to sign it?
Yeah, it appears, again, I haven't taken a look at the bill, but it looks as though it's palatable to the grocers and retailers.
I think a statewide ban is preferred to a sort of piecemeal town-by-town approach by the retailers.
Yeah. So from my perspective, if it's okay with them and it has the majority in the legislature approving of this, then I'm sure it'll become law. I was questioning the tax on or the 10 cents on bags, on paper bags. I wasn't quite sure why that was necessary to tell a retailer that they could charge 10 cents for a bag. I don't believe they have to.
Mm. So it's allowing, not requiring.
Yeah, I
retailers.
Believe. Okay. And that's what I want to check when I read the bill. But I believe that they have that flexibility. But I don't know of anything in a retail shop that where we've told them they can or can't charge. So I don't know why that's necessary myself.
Maybe, but just as an incentive to try to encourage more.
Maybe, but if you
bags.
Don't if you don't have to do it, then
you don't need to put it in the bill.
And they're already people are already getting charged for bags, paper, plastic, and they just put it into their overhead, and it's the cost of doing business. So
would that question
now.
Of requiring versus allowing be enough to scupper the bill? I mean, would you veto for that reason?
I'm not. Well, I don't know. I don't believe that's the case.
Right.
I believe that they're given the flexibility. And again, it didn't make a lot of sense to me. The alternative to you need to give them some alternative to plastic. And so, again, it has the support of the retailers and grocers and the majority of Vermonters, it appears, as well as the legislature. So I'm sure it'll become law.
All right. But you still haven't said whether you'll sign it or not.
Yeah. Again, if everything's technically correct, I will sign it.
You plan to sign it. Yeah. Okay. Got it. So Andrea writes in just on this question that we've been talking about earlier, saying Governor Scott showed impressive courage when he signed gun legislation last year. It was a major driving factor when I voted for him in November. And Andrea wants to know, will you show the same courage this year and sign the reproductive freedom bill? I certainly hope so. We've talked a little bit about that. So Andrea's voting. Please sign. Dan says, data from the Agency of Natural Resources demonstrates that Vermont's climate pollution is steadily rising. The actions coming out of the current legislative session will do little to slow that down. It seems that the governor doesn't view our carbon pollution as a primary problem, or that there is any urgency in dealing with climate change generally. Are those fair characterizations? If not, will he use his bully pulpit to help Vermonters wake up and understand what is coming at us?
Well, I believe climate change is real. We talked about this on a number of programs. I believe most of it, our carbon emissions are due to transportation and vehicles, and we are taking steps this year. It was part of my budget to include incentives for electric vehicles. I think that is the future. I'm pretty excited about it, by the way. I think that anyone who has driven an electric vehicle should be impressed. They've come a long ways, and the price is coming down. And the battery situation is part of what's driving that. I think the technology is changing in terms of lithium batteries, and again, it's creating more capacity, a longer life, and less cost. So those are all ingredients to transitioning to electric vehicles. So we've included that. The legislature went along with it. And I would say that that we're taking some steps, maybe not fast enough for some, but we have to put the infrastructure in place. We can't just transition if 60% of our emissions is carbon, carbon emissions is due to transportation. That's not going to happen overnight without a charging infrastructure if we're going to go to electric vehicles. Now, there may be some others. It might be hydrogen in the future as well. I mean, that I don't think people have given up on that, and I think that it could be practical. But it appears electric is where we're going. When you see Harley Davidson come out with a line of electric motorcycles, then you know things are changing in the U.S.
And, although it'll be when there are more four-wheel drive vehicles and more light trucks available that I think Vermonters will be more likely to sign on.
But there are. There's a company, and I'll get the name wrong, starts with an R. If you have an opportunity, you should Google it because it's a forward-looking truck and pickup. And I think that we'll see those. I think Ford is coming out with one, I think an F-150, mm-hmm. in the next year. That will be a game changer as well. So we'll see more. And I think that I think you're right, though. They need to be all-wheel drive. And again, we have the technology for that. And as the batteries get better, we'll transition more and more.
And more state resources for charging stations, or is that public-private partnership?
Part of our plan has been to build out that infrastructure, trying to focus on the 89 and 91 corridors, but trying to develop more public-private partnerships, as well as making sure, because as we transition again, because we count on tourism, we have to make sure that we have a place for people to come and charge. As more and more people use that. So I think we'll see a ramped up. It won't happen. It won't be a straight linear line. All of a sudden, as everything starts coming together, it'll be a steep curve.
Well, it better be if we're going to meet our goals on the electric car.
Which I think we can.
Yeah. So while we're talking about the environment, you know, at the beginning of this session, it seemed like you and the legislature were pretty far apart on how to fund clean water projects. And it looks like now the state legislature has maybe come around to your way of thinking, planning to fund this year's clean water projects largely through unexpectedly high state revenues. This seems like a victory for you.
Well, I'd say it's a victory for us and the lake and water quality in general. I just believe that we could do it with existing resources. My budget included that without raising taxes. The legislature's come a long ways. And I think having an economy that's going pretty well, having a surplus allowed us to come together. So I think it's a win-win for everyone. I don't think there's any one victor in this.
So when you're having a beer or a kombucha or a coffee with your staff or your family or friends, you're not tempted to say, I told you so?
No. No, I think we have to prove ourselves and we have an obligation to make sure that we're making our case and had it not been for a thriving economy and the surplus, this might not have happened. So it could have gone either way, but we're in a good place.
Let's go to Sheldon and Winooski. Sheldon, go right ahead. You're on the air with the governor.
Hi. I was calling because I've been tracking the different environmental bills that the legislature has passed this year, and I saw one about medical monitoring for people who've been exposed to toxic chemicals, and I was just wondering if you plan to sign it.
Governor, do you know about this bill?
Yes, I do. In fact, it was one that I vetoed last year, and I'm concerned about this bill because it doesn't look as though they've addressed the concerns that I had. My concerns specifically are around the standard that we set for medical monitoring. And without a clear standard for exposure, we're making it hard for businesses to get insurance. They've told us this. The insurance industry has said, you know, they're not going to insure these companies because there's no clear standard. And so there was a I was hopeful. There was an amendment by Representative Beck, a Republican from St. Johnsbury, who offered an amendment that I think would have made it palatable in the House, and it failed. It was closer. It was close, but it failed. It doesn't appear. I'm going to look at the bill when it comes to me. But it doesn't appear to have gotten us close enough for me to be in favor of the bill. But we'll see.
You know, it's not entirely clear at this point, Governor Scott, whether the minimum wage and the paid family leave bills will actually make it through in this first half of the biennium. Although I spoke with VPR State House reporter Peter Hirschfeld before we came into the studio today, and he said they're closer now than they have been, although, you know, who knows exactly what that means. There's still a lot to be determined. It sounds like this is Democrats who are really struggling with how to come to terms on this. Do you have a sense now of whether or not you would sign legislation on either of those issues, or are you fully opposed to the way they're moving through at this point?
Well, I don't know what they're going to end up with. It's all over the place. It's been quite a difference between the House and the Senate on both of those issues.
A mandatory paid family leave bill, for example, just a non-starter with you?
Yeah, I've been trying to to look for areas of a common goal. And I think the common goal for us is I think family leave is important. I just believe that we can do something with a voluntary voluntary family leave.
Even without New Hampshire?
We could do it without New Hampshire. But New Hampshire, I think, is going to – they'll be before us. And I think it's interesting. I think it was just today. You might want to look into this. But I believe that Connecticut Democratic governor just vetoed paid family leave in their state. And for a lot of the same reasons that I'm concerned about paid family leave in our state. And I would say that there are many Democrats who are having a bit of heartburn over this as well. This is a lot of money. And as you might recall, last year I vetoed paid family leave, and I said that I thought we could take a different approach. And that was going to cost, I think, all in about $16 million. They came back this year with the House proposal that was $80 million with a payroll tax all in. And then the Senate came with one with leaving the medical portion out, and I think it was $27 million. But it's all, you know, these are all payroll taxes, and increasing the cost of living on Vermonters, and I think that again is moving in the wrong direction, and I think we need to make Vermont more affordable. We need to reduce the cost of living, so we can attract more people here. We need to grow the economy. And I'm not sure that this does that. The voluntary family leave, though, is interesting because working with another state would be the first in its country to do this. And now, you know, we're going to reach out to Connecticut. If we can do something together, a tri-state agreement, I think it would make it even more economical.
So on the paid family leave bill and on minimum wage, the $15 minimum wage, and, you know, how long would that take and, you know, for over how many years? And those are some of the questions that are going on with legislators. But as they're trying to figure out if they can come to agreement, are you or is someone from your administration in touch with legislators like over the last 24 or 48 hours on where you might stand on those bills?
On some, over the last week or so, I've met with the speaker and the pro tem two or three times. And I think we're laying out our positions. I don't think it's any surprise. This isn't my initiative. I didn't forward the I don't believe that the increase in the minimum wage would be good for Vermont. I believe there's another approach. Again, I look for common goals. I think what they're trying to do is they know the cost of living is high in Vermont. They want to put more money in the pockets of those Vermonters that could use it the most. And I want the same thing. I believe that focusing on the economy, making Vermont more affordable, maybe taking some of the tax burden off from Vermonters, that's another approach. And that's one that I think is as equally as viable. So that we can compete with other states. So we share the same goal. We just have a different route to get there. The Department of Labor has come out with a couple of I think recently came out with showing that I think there's a 2 or 3% rise in the average wage in Vermont. That's good news, and I think that again, the better the economy, the better off. And we have a 2.2% unemployment rate. The lowest maybe in history. So that tells me that there's going to be a supply and demand issue. And we'll, demographics in our state are problematic. We need more youth. And I believe that the wages will rise as supply is depleted.
So you'd like to let market forces.
Yeah, I think it's working.
Let's go to Craig, who's calling in from Paulette. Hi, Craig.
Hi. I just wanted to ask Governor Scott, when you were campaigning for re-election back in 2018, you promised that you weren't going to sign any new gun control legislation. Now, Bill S-169, which is a 24-hour waiting period on pistol purchases in the state, is headed to your desk. Are you going to follow through on your promise and actually veto gun control legislation this time? Thank you.
Yeah, I said during the campaign, we don't need to debate this, but I never promised that I wouldn't sign it. I didn't think that we needed to have any more legislation with guns. I thought we had enough last year. I think that we need to come to grips with that. And I think we need a bit of a waiting period on gun legislation as well. This is heading to my desk. I haven't seen it yet. Again, I have 5 days from when I receive it. And that's another piece of legislation that has not arrived. So when it does, I'll look at it. Again, I'm trying to contemplate what I'm going to do. But suffice it to say, I don't know as it accomplishes the goals as well. I didn't think that we should be taking this up this year.
So, you know, we've been researching behind the scenes here as you and I have been talking, Governor, and it looks like on that plastic bag ban, it did change in conference, and it is a requirement that there would be that retailers would have to charge for customers who want to use a paper bag, certain kinds of paper bags, like a big grocery bag. So does that change things for you if that bill reaches your
again,
desk with that?
Well, I'll take a look. I think that might surprise a few legislators as well, because I'm not sure that they understood that either. But we'll take a look.
And we're looking at it too. So here at VPR, we'll make sure that we can keep you up to date on exactly where things stand. You know, a lot of legislation changes in the last few days, and sometimes it does get to your desk with a different understanding than what you thought it might have had in it.
That's the problem. It's very volatile in some respects. When we're asked to react to a certain piece of legislation that your listeners might hear about, it's only passed one body. It might have even passed out of one committee, and they want you to react to it. Well, it has a long ways to go. And even when it passes both bodies, then there's a conference committee of six people, three from the Senate, three from the House, and they come to a conclusion and they make a lot of deals. And then they're supposed to come back and explain what the differences are to their respective bodies to see if they agree. So last I heard, it was voluntary. I don't know. I haven't. That's the first I've heard of this.
Let's go to Bevan, who's calling in from Brattleboro. Bevan, you're on the air.
Hi, Governor Scott. I really appreciate your stance on pro-choice and support of women. And I just wanted to get your feedback on yesterday's events between Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump and Trump's refusal to work with Democrats. And I just feel like it's germane to all states.
Bevan, thanks for the call. You know, people may well be aware of this, but it looks like President Trump has said, look, I'm not going to work with the Democrats until they stop doing these, what he calls, phony investigations. And, you know, you don't have to deal with national politics in your job, but you certainly do as a state governor, as part of the State Governors Association, in thinking about your party and in thinking about politics in this country in general and how they filter down to Vermont. So what's your perspective?
Obviously, I don't have much control over the president. I believe that character and integrity are important. I believe that treating each other with respect and civility is important, regardless of the issue. I think that over my last now three years, I don't believe that any legislator could say that I've mistreated anyone. I'm always open-minded, willing to listen, and we may disagree in the end, but there's no lack of civility on my part. And I think that that's what we need more of. We have to promote that. We need more role models in this country. We each have an obligation to do that in our own daily lives, as well as on the center stage legislative process. And certainly our president has an obligation as well. So having said that, we are proving that we can do things different here in Vermont. And we've had a change in the way we are doing business, how we're treating one another, and it's been a welcome change. And I think that in the end, we're not going to agree on every issue, but it's been done with a tremendous amount of respect and civility.
It does feel different to you this year than last year?
Absolutely.
In what way? More communication or just better?
Both. Both more receptive. We're engaging. We took everything to heart. We're trying to do better, and they are as well. So I give great credit to the legislature for how they treated our administration, and I believe that we'll be fine in the end. But again, not everyone's going to agree with everything. But again, we did it in a manner we can be proud of.
Well, we'll see if that holds true in year two of the biennium, which of course is when, you know, push comes to shove for certain really controversial pieces of legislation, including next year, probably whether there will be a retail framework for marijuana. So
respect is a choice.
That's right.
So it doesn't matter the end result. You have to choose to be disrespectful.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show, sharing your perspective with us today. Governor Phil Scott, thanks.
Thank you very much.